You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Now, according to Mr. Hall, Scott Hall, he said this is what they did, and I quote, "We scanned every freaking ballot," end quote. Mr. Hall then said that the team had the blessing of the local elections board and, quote, "scanned all the equipment, imaged all the hard drives, and scanned every single ballot," end quote. Now, this past week or so, as you're listening to this, court filings revealed that the Coffee County data breach is now part of a sprawling investigation into election interference being conducted by Fannie T. Williams. She is the district attorney of Fulton County, Georgia, which encompasses most of Atlanta, the biggest city in Georgia. Now, taking images of actual voting machines could give an attacker intimate knowledge of the baked-in defenses to the voting machine and build a workaround to hijack that machine and alter its code, meaning the upcoming 2022 or 2024 elections could potentially have compromised voting machines that could do things like give us the wrong tally due to malfeasance. This was the biggest problem I had, too, with Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy's cyber symposium. If you've been a longtime follower of me, last year, I actually sat through like all two or three days of his cyber symposium, tweeting it out. I wrote an article about it, what chain of custody looks like. And one of those things they produced live on stage, as I was literally just watching this as it was streaming, was an image of a Dominion voting machine server. And that is utterly terrifying, because if that image gets around, then anybody malicious, let's say Russian intelligence, could figure out how to actually compromise the voting machines. And that is something that we did not see in the 2020 election. And I know people are going to claim one thing or the other. I'm going over what has been stated officially by Chris Krebs, former head of the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, and other agencies that have been looking into this for quite some time. But with these images out there, it is a huge concern. It really is. I mean, so by virtue of that, if there was a concern about the existing security of a voting system, let's say Coffee County, Georgia, then the proper procedures that should have been followed are this. One, representatives from both political parties and federal, state, and law enforcement should have been present. Obviously, that was not the case. Basically, the representatives of the former president went there on their own, and that obviously it puts the Democrats at a disadvantage. It'd be the same if the Democrats sent somebody to look at something and didn't invite the Republicans as well, not to mention federal, state, and law enforcement, which I'll get to here in a second, because a forensic image, and this is point number two, should have been taken by law enforcement and basically secured by law enforcement. Then, point number three, independent cybersecurity researchers would gain access to the image, but not given an actual copy of that image and then observed by law enforcement as they worked. Meaning, you know, the Republicans could send in a researcher, the Democrats could send in a researcher, law enforcement is watching the whole thing. And so you've got multiple eyes on it. The one copy stays there. So nobody can copy it, change it, and then put it out to the world saying, oh yes, this is what we found, when the original doesn't say that, those kinds of things. Those results then by those researchers could have been shared among all of the parties. Now, that would ensure that the security of the voting was protected while being examined. Having Scott Hall, a bail bondsman, who probably is not that technical, basically, and he also publicly supported one candidate, former President Trump, over the other candidate, allowing him to grab copies of this kind is just horrifying to the cybersecurity community. God forbid that he started sharing this out with multiple people, or if everybody got wind of this, God forbid a foreign intelligence agency hacked him. And so these are the things we're talking about. I think it's really important to understand just how critical chain of custody and defense of those things are. Now, for the record, I, like overwhelmingly most cybersecurity professionals there, want to go back to paper ballots. I do not want to vote on a touchscreen, an electronic machine. I would rather have a paper ballot. I would rather have a receipt. And I think even though it slows counting down compared to just the automatic tallies a machine can do, we basically have a paper trail in a way that is significantly harder to alter than a potential computer. And we've known that there have been vulnerabilities in voting machines for quite some time. But I think it's important to understand that having a vulnerability does not mean that something has been hacked or modified maliciously, meaning I can unlock my doors in my car all night and go to bed and forget that I have completely unlocked, and it's obviously a vulnerability. Somebody could just walk up, open my door, get in, steal my radio, whatever it is. But that doesn't mean somebody actually did. That doesn't mean it did. I can walk in the morning and be like, oh my God, I totally forgot to lock my car door, get in my car, everything's there. Nothing's been sat in. The seat hasn't been altered. My radio's there, et cetera, et cetera. That's what we're talking about. And so instead of doing that, instead of basically understanding these vulnerabilities and continuously patching this, as these things are now getting dumped by people that are not respecting things like chain of custody and the proper process of evidence, going back to paper makes perfect sense. And so that is my spiel on that. And again, I don't care what your politics are. I think this is important that we have fair and safe elections all around the world. That's just a democratic norm. And I would hope most of you, hopefully all of you, agree with me there. So those were your breaches of the week. Well, let's just say you were affected thanks to Twilio. And if you're in the United States, hopefully you're not going to be affected in 2022 or 2024 when you go and vote for whoever you vote for.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive aligns with my last radio show on basically the issues that we saw at Mar-a-Lago. That would be former President Trump's Florida home and golf course, or golf resort, I should say. And quite frankly, that was not surprising to us in the physical security and me in the cybersecurity community, because we in the cybersecurity community and physical security community have known about the many basically issues of then President Trump, now citizen Trump, former President Trump, and all of that. So this was not surprising that something like this would happen. And there has been a history and a pattern of this that I want to actually talk about as well. Again, I'm not adjudicating the man, for the record. I am a security professional, specifically a cybersecurity professional. I am looking at this from the security standpoint because that's the best way that I can possibly talk about this. So again, as I've mentioned over and over and over and over, that cybersecurity is agnostic to politics, but we're not immune from it. And I don't care if you love or hate the guy, there are security issues here. We're going to go through those things. Now, that said, there is plenty of obviously things to discuss. And so with that, let's get going, because this is the many security woes of President Trump. Now, if you're thinking about this, presidents, prime ministers, popes, I even assume the Dalai Lama, as chill as he seems to be, are all headaches for security personnel. Leaders oftentimes demand the flexibility to use technology and handle sensitive material as they see fit, while being constant targets for those who wish to do them harm or steal state secrets or simply hack into their lives in some way. Now, a solid approach to security typically has three pillars that act as an overarching umbrella for how we implement the protection of people, assets, and information. Physical safeguards ensure that there are barriers to overcome so an attacker cannot simply walk up to the target and shoot, or walk into a building and steal classified information. I mean, think about physical barriers. Try to get into a military base. You're stopped. There's blockages. You know, if the president is out walking around, he's surrounded by Secret Service. Physical barriers could be the limo known as the Beast, which is basically bomb resistant, bulletproof, all those kinds of things. We have physical safeguards. Now, on top of this, we have technical safeguards, and they ensure that electronic threat detection is in place. This could be cameras watching the actual physical security to see, let's say, that shooter running through the crowd to notify the physical security team. This could be actual firewalls that we have in our networks to stop hackers from breaking into wherever the sensitive data is stored. It could be encryption. It could be antivirus. All these different kinds of things go into technical security. And obviously, this is an overview. And finally, administrative safeguards ensure that proper policies and procedures, along with the management of basically everything, are in place so that security personnel don't really miss anything and that information is handled with the care it needs. While this is a very basic high-level explanation of security, it's important to understand how we use this very simple framework to ensure that we don't find ourselves compromised in some way. Now, in the case of President Trump, his administration tended to follow along with his, what I'm calling, maverick leadership style, which makes me speculate that an army of security personnel around him were probably given lifetime prescriptions of Xanax. I have had clients that are mavericks in the past where they just basically want to do what they want to do, and it makes for just a whole bunch of headaches. And you're like, my God, it is going to be so, so difficult to secure this person. Security does have flexibility, but it also requires rigidity to a certain extent, as we're about to talk about. Now, undoubtedly, this president was more of a challenge to secure than previous office holders. He really didn't follow the norms, although to be fair, all presidents are a challenge in their own way. And we'll be talking about that as well. So in that vein, and in the light of recent events at Mar-a-Lago that I just mentioned, I thought it would be a good idea to basically put into context the multitude of security issues that former President Trump brought to the table, just given who he is as a person and how he typically operates. Again, I am not getting political here. Don't care if you love or hate the guy. This are the security woes that we in my community had. So here are some of the core highlights, serious ones, minor ones, etc. But these are basically the security headaches that we in the cybersecurity and security communities were all discussing while these events were receiving basically minimal coverage in the news or had a non-security framing when they were reported, as you will see. And so to start, then President Trump, right after being sworn into office, refused to use a government-issued secure mobile phone offered by the Secret Service and instead used his personal phone, which was a consumer-grade phone at the time, an Android. Now, his phone, the same model that any of us literally could have walked into any mobile carrier store and bought, is incredibly hackable compared to the hardened versions of mobile phones that the national security apparatus creates to keep our leaders secure. And for the record, former President Obama also balked when he was requested that he give up his personal BlackBerry, but he did compromise and let the cybersecurity personnel heavily modify, secure, and restrict its use due to the obvious and intense concerns of the President of the United States being arguably one of the largest targets for hacking in the world. Basically, there we go. Now, by the end of the Obama administration, Chinese state-sponsored hackers were maintaining aggressive persistence in their attacks against the White House. That's actually according to Obama White House cybersecurity advisor Michael Daniel, who I actually interviewed on this radio show in 2020. If you're a longtime listener, a couple years ago, I talked to him. He's now the president of the Cyber Threat Alliance. What this means, though, is that the White House, when President Trump took office, was already a critical and constant target for foreign cyber attacks, not just from aggressive Chinese hackers, but others as well. Obviously, that is a huge problem. Now, on top of this, and moving on, and this was also early on in the administration, Trump's advisor Kellyanne Conway also caused a security stir in the White House early on. She was actually photographed with her mobile phone while sitting on the couch at the White House. Now, the controversy the media picked up on was that her feet were on the couch in the Oval Office while she was in shoes. We did like an entire 2 or 3 days on, you name the media outlet on that. However, we in the security community just cringed at the use of consumer-grade electronics in one of the most secure offices in the world, as they are much more susceptible to hacking, just like the president's personal phone. And while former President Trump's administration obviously wasn't the first to have these issues, this is still a grave concern for whoever occupies the presidency. Now, on top of this, when President Trump fired FBI Director James Comey, if you recall, he invited Russian diplomats into the Oval Office. While that move itself may be debatable in this political sphere, and feel free to debate it, the cybersecurity community was concerned that a Russian photographer was allowed into the Oval Office along with his electronic equipment. Could they have taken pictures of anything they shouldn't have? Could that camera have integrated a wireless capture device? This type of espionage exists, and it's so easy to integrate wireless snooping and cellular devices into virtually anything, including a USB mouse attached to a computer which is something I actually spoke about at length with Yossi Applebaum of Sepio Systems when they discovered Chinese intelligence secretly integrating microprocessors into servers that were slated to be delivered to Apple, the U.S. Navy, and other large entities. And that, basically, interview was also on this radio show a while back. We've been talking about these things for years if you're a longtime listener. You can also find these on my YouTube channel @NickEspinoza in the interview section. You can go see Michael Daniel and Yossi Applebaum's independent interviews that got on the air. Now, on top of that, this was also the same meeting where President Trump revealed classified information to the Russian foreign minister and ambassador about Israel, which, needless to say, is probably why the NSA probably has a dedicated Alcoholics Anonymous meeting just for their personnel at this point, because that obviously is a huge headache. And Israel being a very staunch ally, the last thing we want to do is give up very sensitive information our allies are giving to us, because obviously then our allies don't want to give us more information. There you go. On top of this, we need to talk about Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, may he rest in peace after his recent assassination. He visited former President Trump at his Mar-a-Lago home in early 2017, February of 2017, at the beginning of the Trump presidency. During his visit, he was pulled into an impromptu meeting with the then President Trump about a response to North Korea's most recent missile tests. This happened in the open-air patio where members of the Gulf Club, aka members that don't have security clearance, were also dining, meaning they were talking about basically the nuclear issues, with North Korea, sensitive material, while people that by no rights should be privy to a conversation like that were literally dining a few feet away from them. Now, this prompted then White House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, now Speaker, to tweet, and I quote, "There's no excuse for letting an international crisis play out in front of a bunch of country club members like dinner theater," end quote. That's a pretty good burn, I'm going to be honest. Moving on, when President Trump met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Hamburg, Germany in 2017, he also took possession of his translator's notes and ordered that translator not to discuss what had transpired with other U.S. government officials. From a security and transparency standpoint, this is also a violation of the Presidential Records Act, which has been in the news lately due to the events at Mar-a-Lago. Now, if something was agreed upon by those two world leaders, the U.S. could be at a security disadvantage if proper security administration officials were unaware of what might have been happening shortly after that meeting. We have to make sure that we are keeping our security apparatus essentially informed and on alert, you know, if they're agreeing to stand down, escalate, you know, do whatever it is. And obviously that's something that is, just of incredible importance. Also in 2017, famed rock and country musician Kid Rock, yes, that Kid Rock, met with President Trump in the White House, along with Sarah Palin, Ted Nugent, another rocker, and their respective spouses. Now, recently, in a 2022 interview with Fox News' Tucker Carlson, Kid Rock mentioned that the president in 2017 sought his advice on geopolitical issues. Kid Rock, basically joking around with Tucker Carlson, said, and I quote, and I'm going to clean this up, and I quote, "We were looking at maps and blank. And I'm like, am I supposed to be on this blank? I make dirty records. What do you think we should do about North Korea? I'm like, what? I don't think I'm qualified to answer this," end quote. Now, while Kid Rock may be a talented musician, he does not have the proper vetting and clearances to look at maps and blank, you know, if they relate to sensitive information regarding the nuclear situation in Korea. Meaning he was giving a tour, I don't know, maybe President Trump wanted to show off, maybe they're good friends. It's like, hey, check out what I'm working on. You know, here's a North Korean map with all their nuclear sites. And Kid Rock is literally telling Tucker Carlson 5 years later, should I really be seeing this stuff? And obviously they're laughing about it and joking out of this interview, but from a cybersecurity standpoint, that's a huge problem because, again, sensitivity of information. Now, on top of this, in 2018, President Trump once again met with President Putin in Helsinki, Finland, and made the following statement when asked if the president of the United States believed his own intelligence infrastructure in reporting on President Putin over the allegations of Russian interference in the 2016 election. And I quote former President Trump, "President Putin says it's not Russia. I don't see any reason why it would be," end quote. Now, even though Trump somewhat walked back that remark the next day, statements like this can undermine the confidence in the intelligence community and federal law enforcement, which makes it potentially harder for them to release future reports while still maintaining confidence of the general public. When that trust has been eroded, disinformation can run rampant, which makes implementing and enforcing security that much more difficult. And so you may think, well, he said something off the cuff, or, you know, maybe he said it in mistake, you know, as a mistake, or maybe he meant it and then had to backpedal, whatever that was. The point is, though, is that it makes it therefore more difficult, because there are going to be more people out there that say, see, Russia didn't do something, when we have a lot of evidence that they did. I've literally reviewed that. I've talked about that at length. I'm not going to adjudicate that again here. You can go see a lot of my past episodes on SoundCloud for that, or on YouTube on various interviews I've done as well. Now, on top of this, because there's more, President Trump's friendliness to the QAnon movement has been considered a national security threat due to the galvanization of domestic violent extremists. Now, as a quick backstory, in 2017, then President Trump was taking questions in the state dining room where he was hosting a dinner for military commanders and their spouses. Gesturing to the military guests, he stated, "You guys know what this represents? Maybe it's the calm before the storm," end quote. Now, when pressed, the former president did not elaborate. Whatever Trump meant at that moment, this helped to motivate the QAnon movement, who uses the term "the storm" as a call to overthrow the government, which has been gaining momentum since Pizzagate. Now, if you recall, Pizzagate is where people began to seriously believe that Hillary Clinton and a cabal of other leaders, cabal being their word, were running a child trafficking ring in the basement of a pizza restaurant in Washington, D.C. that didn't actually have a basement. They've also been blamed and accused for many other things, like drinking the blood of children, all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to get into this. But since that time, the United States has seen multiple acts of violence committed by QAnon supporters, and many in the security community believe that President Trump made the situation unfortunately worse by repeatedly offering subtle support to this fringe conspiracy movement. You know, he basically said, "I don't know much about them, but they vote for me, so I like them," and, you know, other things as well, using their phraseology basically as whistling to them, or dog whistling to them, if you will, is difficult, because then it puts the security of the country at risk when you have more people that say, "You know what, I'm going to go murder my children because this is the only way out," which actually happened a couple of years ago with a QAnon supporter, not to mention kidnappings, you know, of people that think that kids are in danger when they're not, and other types of violence as well, not to mention groups like, you know, the Proud Boys and all those kinds of things, which we'll talk about in a minute. Now, on top of this, and moving on to the next point, U.S. intelligence officials have repeatedly sounded alarms regarding President Trump's debts to foreign and domestic entities, with hundreds of millions of dollars owed to Germany's Deutsche Bank and others, including the IRS. The national security community is rightfully concerned that those debts could compromise the president. So, for example, working for the intelligence community requires not just background checks, but also financial checks, since having a foreign intelligence agency pay off, say, your gambling debts when you go to Las Vegas means there could be a possible quid pro quo of U.S. secrets being handed over in exchange. We have seen famous cases of that, where spies that have been working, or basically CIA operatives that have been working for foreign intelligence, have been paid large amounts of money to basically get U.S. secrets and send them to Russia and other places. It's a very serious security concern, and with actual classified material being stored insecurely at Mar-a-Lago, it's enough to give even the most veteran agents a serious headache. Though to be clear, at the time that I'm sitting here talking about this, you know, on my first broadcast on my radio show on Monday, August 29th of 2022, there have been no indictments or charges of Donald Trump personally in this vein. I want to make that very clear. I am not saying there has been. There have been no charges or indictments of that. We'll see what happens there. But nevertheless, it is a grave concern to have these kinds of things out there, especially with somebody that can handle classified information. So if I was just Nick, the, you know, military intelligence person, and I was $100,000 in debt, that's going to be a huge problem, because suddenly if my debt is wiped out and I'm driving a Corvette or something, now we've got a serious problem. So to move on top of that, we have to continue, because there is more in this history. Now, federal law enforcement also went on high alert after the 2020 presidential debate, when then President Trump told the Proud Boys to, quote, stand back and stand by. Basically, they are now designated a terrorist organization out of New Zealand, and they used stand back and stand by as a recruiting tool to grow their ranks, thus causing deep concern in the law enforcement and security communities. The Proud Boys have a history of violence in the United States and elsewhere around the world, so increasing their numbers is desirable to pretty much no one outside of their extremist orbit. Now, on top of this, after the horrific events of January 6th, 2021, there were grave national security concerns about his roughly 2 weeks left in office. Aside from the physical security breach of the U.S. Capitol that day, there were concerns that his supporters may attempt to violently interfere with the inauguration of now President Biden, with former President Trump, interestingly enough, being the first surviving president in 152 years to skip his successor's inauguration. There was a concern that this would be a signal to extremist outfits to regroup and attempt one last ditch effort to keep Donald Trump in office. Fortunately, nothing like that happened. Now, given this, everything I just talked about, this is a small sampling of some of the security concerns, big and small, about President Trump's time in office. And it's not surprising that these issues would then follow him out of office as well. Mar-a-Lago, which was his fabled winter White House, is a golf resort, and that makes it virtually impossible to fully secure with the now reduced Secret Service staff that a former president is granted for the rest of his life. So, for example, in 2019, a Chinese national, Liu Jing, was caught trespassing and taking pictures at Mar-a-Lago. She was acquitted of trespassing but sentenced to 6 months for resisting arrest. Even earlier in 2019, another Chinese national, Yu Jing Zhang, was convicted of lying her way into a restricted area at Mar-a-Lago, lying to federal agents, and possibly carrying malware on a flash drive. Now, recently in 2022, it was also discovered that little to no checking was done on a woman who was posing as a Rothschild family heiress, and she got such deep access to the former president and his inner circle that there are pictures of her with Donald Trump, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and other top officials.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.